This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Friday, 18th of February, 2022. A lot's hitting the market here, not just the Ukraine-Russia tensions, which are on the headlines, but another issue, a very influential voice. Zoltan Pozsar of Credit Suisse, formerly of the Fed, or at least the Department of Treasury and the Fed's response to the global financial crisis, with a very interesting note out yesterday. We'll get to that. First of all, we have you here in the studio, Stein Jakobsen, Saxo Chief Investment Officer. Clearly this latest round of shrill warnings from the U.S. on Russia's intents in terms of an invasion of Ukraine, claims that it continues to build its presence there and tighten its presence at the border. There's been evidence of shelling and both sides blaming the other and the eastern Ukraine breakaway regions. A really difficult situation to navigate here. Can you make us any wiser, or do we just all have to throw up our hands and just wait to see what happens?
I think the only thing we really need to know is that Putin is an excellent chess player. And I don't think Biden is even close to understand the rules of the game of chess. I'm not here by saying that Russia is outright winning, but I think anyone who takes any action on the Russian side as a sign of a new direction, like we've seen from over this week, I think it's mistaken. I am still struggling myself to understand the full idea behind what Putin is doing. I understand in a game theory that he's winning the game right now, because unlike what the West likes to portray, which is that, you know, NATO is getting together and they're shoring up the alliance, and I think it's all but broken. It's sticky tape that keeps the NATO alliance together. And the U.S. response, as I think we talk about in a morning meeting, one day I want to sit down or I want to listen to someone who could explain to me the propaganda that the U.S. is pursuing. Why would you specifically name specific dates, specific hours of the day where there is going to be something, which clearly is not intel they own, because, of course, why would Putin, you know, I think he has enough control of his generals to know that they're not going to leak that information to the Western press.
Total speculation on my part, but I wonder if they're simply getting noise on the networks that's put there on purpose and they're mimicking it. I have no idea, but it almost feels like that way. It feels like they're embarrassing themselves in a way.
It reminds me of when you are market maker in the old days with Brover, you're spoofing the spoof. basically, you're fading the fade. It's impossible. And I just think the magnitude of what goes on sort of in the physical world is one thing. But I think if you take what goes on in terms of propaganda in the physical world, imagine what happens on the internet and, as you say, intelligence that comes down the wires in terms of telecommunication, noise, other signal noise, that's got to be 100 times and 100-fold bigger. Maybe that's why we don't understand how this is playing out, because, you know, there's so much data that not even the supercomputer NASA can keep up with what goes on. And then at the end of the day, like in trading, you need secure hands, you need people in our world, macro traders who's been there before, who've seen the realistic, who understand that the risk is liquidity, not an outside event that comes out and changes the narrative.
Yeah. In any case, just technically speaking, very technical behavior these days in the U.S. indices, for example, the S&P 500, I put up a chart on slide two, edging towards that local pivot low there, and reminder that that is in turn, it says the 23.6% retracement, but that is actually in turn the 61.8% retracement of that rally off the low. So very interesting level, 4350 to 55 area there, a break of which begins to usher in the focus on those lows for the cycle. And there's, I put in a big red line there. You could argue on how to draw it. You could also draw a negative sloping neck and head and shoulders neckline. But just an interesting technical setup here, concerned about downside risks. And you can see in our equity theme baskets, a lot of the high beta stuff, no big surprise, performing the worst, things like bubble stocks. Crypto really taking it on the chin. You talked about liquidity, Stein. It seems to be when these types of concerns crop up, crypto is not really flashing its colors. One thing that is flashing its color is gold. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, we really need to change the subject here, because to me, this is the more interesting I don't know if you'd call it a development. It is a development because it's a very interesting piece that was put out by Zoltan Pozsar, currently of Credit Suisse. But again, this was a guru who was very familiar with the and had a comprehensive understanding of the workings of the financial system, the plumbing of how the financial system worked, was basically coaching the Fed and the U.S. Treasury through its response to the global financial crisis, helping to actually craft policy, asset-backed securities, et cetera, the TALF, if you can remember that acronym, out with a note yesterday in which he says, look, it's time for the Fed to come up with a quote-unquote Volcker moment, referring back to Paul Volcker, the chairman who, ironically, when I had you on Wednesday's thing, we talked about, this is the first Fed chair since the Carter administration we have now with Powell, and that was Volcker at the time, who has been given the mandate to crush inflation and to crush these inflation expectations. So what does he mean by a Volcker moment? He says, well, look, you can't just have the Fed blindly jacking up the front end of the curve and us pricing in a whole series of rate hikes. It's going to trigger a recession. The Fed needs to get creative. It needs to create uncertainty. It needs to tighten financial conditions without necessarily just pounding on the short-term rate. And this could take many forms. It could take the form of just dropping forward guidance, the whole introduction of that, those started especially under Bernanke, drop all the press conferences, announcing a sudden quantitative tightening and no further information, dropping the dot plots from the accompanying materials at those quarterly meetings, a Volcker moment. You've had a lot of thoughts on this as well, Stane. I wrote in my FX update, you can find a link to that on my Twitter feed at John J. Hardy. Take us through your thoughts as you read this piece and what you think it means, especially if the Fed, of course, is listening or if the Fed gets the same idea here.
Yeah, so what Sultan points out is the Fed is caught in a end game, which is that they have to engineer a slowdown in inflation without creating a high unemployment rate, which is essentially translating into a recession. Of course, everyone knows there's less than 1% probability of doing that if they pursue policy entirely on the short end of the curve. But where it gets really interesting is that he goes into this policy, and I wrote a piece back in 2016, which I used to predict that Clinton could not be elected and there will be a Brexit. And that was based on what I called the broken social contract. The broken social contract is basically the effect and a long-held sort of bargaining between the employers and the employees. There is a premise, which is that you have to lift all boats when the whole economy is being lifted. Of course, what we've seen over the last 10 years in particular, but over the last 30 years, is that the boat has only been rising in the high wealth component.
Yeah, and the serial bailout phenomenon. It started with the LTCM, all the way from LTCM till now, basically.
So the focus has been on the improvement of the capital return, because, you know, if you just think simply and simplistically back to the European crisis, it was about securing that the banks was continue to create credit for the system. So it was a bailout of capital relative to labor. Of course, now we come into a situation that we described vividly and too much probably, but there are, you know, simply not enough hands to go around to keep the economy going. The physical world is too small for the practical world. And what then Sultan says is that, listen, in this redistribution policy, the Volcker moment he plays on, of course, also plays on the first three letters, which is VOL, or short for volatility.
Yes, yeah. Volatility.
And the volatility indicates is that there's one in problem, the inflation, there are two solutions. Hiking the short-term interest rate, which we just established does not work. And the second reason why it doesn't work actually is that financial condition right now has only gone up by 60, 70 basis points, despite the fact that Fed is being priced to hike 7 times. So in other words, this is not going to control or cap the inflation. The second part, and now it gets a little bit tricky, but not that tricky anyway, is that you can increase the volatility in the long end of the term premium. You can try to get the long end to reflect. Why would you want to do that? Because the issue that the Federal Reserve has is that prices in goods inflation, and goods is everything we sell. So that's basically our structural argument, the physical world's too small. They cannot impact that. Whatever they do, they're not going to make the path of least resistance for goods prices lower.
Or if they do that, it's only via crashing the economy, which is not what they want to do.
That
is the first instance.
It's by reducing the total demand, but reducing total demand in a world that comes from the highest. If you look at the households, they have the highest house prices, they have the highest saving, the highest cash balance in the equity accounts ever. So it is not going to. But the second part is interesting. He says, yes, but they can impact the service prices. The service prices and the two components that you want to go after if you're Fed in terms of redistribution is the owner equivalent rate, which is the inverse of how high the housing prices is. So in other words, if you get the owner's equivalent rent down, it's because the housing market is coming down, make it more affordable and more redistributable. The second part is, of course, others, or others is really just wage cost. And if you want to deal with wage costs, you need to create an environment. And again, let's just focus again on what is FED's mandate to create a economic model or basis for an economic model which increase the wages without creating inflation. Very right. difficult, but how can it be managed? And then he argues that the way you do that is that you marginally make sure that the supply of labor comes back into market. How do you incentivize that? And that is pretty much the opposite of what a classic capitalistic model would do, is that they will say, oh, you need to pay higher wages. Again, that cannot work for the reason we just described. But what will work is that if you see less return on capital, right. if you create, let's just call it better social moral, if you reestablish the social contract, if you reestablish indirectly the faith in institution, you get a direction, or in my opinion, you get the positive least resistance, the positive least cost, in terms of redistribution, controlling inflation over the long run through a policy which is at a bare minimum rational and logic, unlike the one that we pursue right now, which is boom or bust, essentially. So he is creating a new FONGA mandate.
So the idea that those millions of people that might be a sort of semi-exited the labor force because they're seeing these steady, constant returns on their investments, maybe even some crypto,
billionaires, millionaires,
crypto wealth out there, sitting back in the rentier class, perhaps sitting back and enjoying these asset gains.
And then just back to my own social contract moment. People don't want to work less. People want to be working more productive and more in line with the way they see life. It's not about reducing working weeks to 2 days or retiring altogether. People only retire because they give up on being productive. I think that is a sociological given in academia. That's the way it works. So we sort of reduce everything to financials and return on financials. But what we need to realize is there's a whole new generation, a whole new group, and most importantly, a Federal Reserve and a Democratic Party in the US that needs this narrative to play out along the roots of what he's trying to predict.
And the unfairness of a generation, which is the largest generation in the US, the millennials who are in their 20s and 30s now, that are unable to access the housing market, that are unable to get on board with this this wealth train. That has already left the station, has left them far behind. So yeah, the rejiggering of the equation in favor of labor versus capital. A couple of charts, just to emphasize a couple of our points, put the 2-10 yield curve, you see the brutality of that flattening we've seen. So could this ease up on the pace of the flattening if the Fed chooses to change focus, and we've already priced in as many hikes as we're gonna get this year? We'll see. We need to see the Fed, of course, respond to this. I think it's very compelling arguments we're talking about here. And then on the right, this is on slide 3, by the way, I put the home prices in blue, where you can see that the rate of return on housing year on year has actually exceeded where it was in the housing bubble, which is unbelievable pace of gains there from how the Fed goosed long-term interest rates to fall. And the mortgage rates in red, you can see how quickly these are rising. I inversed that curve. So already we do have a little bit of tightening in the pipeline, but the question will be the degree to which this picks up. And then just very briefly on slide 4, what does the Volcker movement look like? It was really clear, it's quite clear from this chart that Volcker was brought on board there in August of 79, Carter wanting him on board to help crush inflation ahead of the 1980 election. And you can see the scale of rate increases from the Fed in the blue line there. What does a Volcker moment look like? Well, you can see they're taking rates from just above 10% all the way to 20%. And then that created a short recession in 80, and then he did it again in 82, taking it from below 10 to all the way to 20 again. And you see the gold price there in black. If it was, and I believe it was, the best proxy for inflation expectations at the time, had pretty much been thoroughly crushed by then. Although arguably gold had gotten so expensive in that 79 run-up that the entire U.S. money supply was backed by gold at that point. And speaking of gold, Stain, we've talked a bit about this in recent days. We've been impressed with gold's performance here. There is the risk, there is the concern, I guess, on gold bull's part that there's a lot of linkage here. And I think there is headline-wise linkage to the Russia-Ukraine situation. But can you link the gold story from here to what we've just talked about? To me, there's an argument to be made that gold is an especially decent preserve for value in an environment where the Fed would be going after asset valuations, leverage in the system, volatility. Gold safe haven rule, I think, really could come to the fore there. What are your thoughts?
Right. So remember the financial repression that, a lot of people talk about that we've been in for a long time has depressed volatility. So that's why Salton plays on the Folger moment with the first three letters volatility. So I think what will drive gold up is two things. One is that, you know, Salton's argument is that structural inflation cannot be dealt with, which means that the terminal rate needs to be higher. The terminal rate being higher means that the amount of inflation in the future will be higher than the present consensus, right? So there's a direct link between an environment like that. And then you have the redistribution of wealth. If that goes out of the financial market, some of that money needs to find a new harbor. Because of course, as you indicated with crypto, to a large extent, what happens with momentum stock is that they are not driven by the spot demand, they're driven by the sentiment into the future. That's why during the COVID-19, we could have, you know, fantasy levels being dealt in companies with barely a paper idea, and then the valuation was right. infinite. So there is a clear connection. And I've said for the last 3 months that I think gold is really the upside. If it's one product you want to own optionality, is it in the gold miners and in the gold futures and the gold cash? Because it is exactly the right instrument to be protected in terms of a portfolio construction. I'm not saying you're going to put 100% in.
No, no.
I'm just saying as it used to be, 5 to 10% allocation makes sense, which by the way is also what we have in the 100-year portfolio. And just for the record, I was looking at in that context to align these things, I was looking at a 100-year portfolio, which is an educational portfolio we run. And if you look at the distribution this year, it's small down, but the main positive contribution comes from energy, comes from gold, and comes from China. So it's kind of interesting that you see these plays go hand in hand all the time. And the commodity story, of course, as well, was a contributor. The rest, of course, is like any other portfolio that you deal with, hampered by this. So you see it in the portfolio construction if you run a multi-asset.
And there's a long volatility component to that portfolio as well. That would come into the fore if this becomes an actual policy focus, which would be very interesting to see how it shapes up. Yeah, and in a lot of the earnings we've been seeing lately, we're seeing some of those companies you talked about just continuing to get punished. You know, they continue to grow their top line in many cases, but it's just not fast enough to where they were priced in valuation terms. Palantir was the latest name, dropping 15%. Yesterday. I'm very briefly just looking across the FX space and my FX note, I'm wondering if this new policy focus could actually not necessarily be US dollar supportive for various reasons. And we're kind of seeing that playing out to a degree. I think it's quite interesting that the US dollar is as sort of soft or indifferent, even slightly weak, I would say, relative to the backdrop, not playing its safe haven role. I have to wonder if we get a proper market deleveraging event, if that's going to remain the case on a single day. But just look at something like the Aussie dollar, pointed it out yesterday. Still the case today, despite yesterday's markets. We did see some hopeful note overnight that Lavrov of Russia, the foreign minister, will meet with Blinken next to U.S. Secretary of State Blinken next week. But still, Aussie dollar relatively bid. It does need to work through that next figure or so to sort of argue that it's fully has posted a low at that really massive and existential zero spot 70 level. And then you can see on the FX trend charts and readings on slide 6 in the FX slide, that gold reading really sticking out, plus 6.1. If you're not familiar with the scale here, there is no scale, but anything above 3 or 4 is starting to get a very strong, and you're seeing gold essentially strong across the board against all currencies. I won't spend any time on earnings. I think it's quite interesting to note, you know, talking about this inequality equation, to look at something like these luxury product makers, especially Hermes reporting today. Look at the reversal there on slide 7 in that chart, and a tremendous run-up in that chart from the depths of the pandemic outbreak. And you can see how essentially the rich were rewarded by the pandemic policy response. Will we see that addressed with a new policy focus? An interesting question. And then the macro events for today, a few central bank speakers. I'm not really focusing on anything today. Again, I think it's more to see how the tone shapes up from the Fed. We have the constant headline risk of this Ukraine-Russia situation. And then next week, I'll be interested to see whether this Conference Board Consumer Confidence Indicator from the U.S. shows a bit more sympathy with what we're seeing in the Michigan indicator, which, because of the nature of that survey, and I think some of the questions linked to personal finances and inflation is why we're almost at the lows historically in recent decades there, but not on the conference board indicator. And then the highlight of the week, macro data-wise, will be that January PCE inflation data point on Friday, that PCE inflation series, the one that the Fed supposedly uses for its inflation inputs. All right, plenty to chew on there. And of course, have to see how this shapes up. If we see anything that echoes what Zoltan Pozsar is saying, do have a look at our various thoughts on that issue. Have a great weekend. Stay careful out there. And we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.